Hello and welcome to the Keeper Cut Podcast. Chad Young and Pete Ball with you. And we're getting really close to trade deadlines if they haven't happened already. I think most of mine have happened other than my auto new ones. My auto new ones are still coming up. Let's see. We're recording right now on Sunday, August 25th. August 31st is the trade deadline for auto new. So I've either made my final choices on who I'm trading, who I'm keeping, or I'm getting ready to make those choices. And so, Pete, you had suggested we talk about tough keeper decisions. That felt perfect to me because that's a lot of what I'm wrestling with right now as I come up to the deadline is like, is this a guy a keeper? Is he not a keeper? It's stressing me out. It's stressing me out.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's that time of the year where, like you said, the trade deadlines for most leagues have passed. So your roster is pretty much your roster. And even if you're still looking at winning a championship, you may have had a playoff spot locked up for a while and your mind can't help but go to what happens after that. What are my keepers looking right. like? I know that's the case probably for the both of us in Keeper Cut Listener League 2. It's not one that I thought about talking about for today, but I know we had been leading our divisions for a while, and so I've been thinking about keepers for some time. Granted, all of my rosters hurt, so that doesn't really help, but it can't help but think about it no matter where you are in the standings. What is my situation looking like next year?
Yeah, for sure. That's my issue in Keeper Cut Listener League 1, which I am going to talk about. Is I made a bunch of trades to try to build myself up, and my team is just not doing well, we'll say.
Oh, really? I haven't looked at the standings there in a while, but you were leading that one for a while.
Yeah, I was. And we'll talk about it in a little bit, but I am in third now.
Oh, wow.
And I'm 11 points out of first.
Oh, that might be over.
Yeah, so we'll see. We'll see. But we'll talk about that team in a minute. So, but first, it is episode 148 of the Keeper Cut Podcast, which means we're looking at jersey number 48. And this is an interesting one because, like, the all-time best, if you look at just, you know, Baseball Reference WAR, to wear the number for a meaningful amount of time are Rick Reuschel, Torrey Hunter, and then you get into guys like DeGrom, Sam McDowell, who were, I don't know how familiar you are with McDowell since he's, you know, before either of our times, but he spent his biggest years with the Guardians, the Indians then. But McDowell is actually somewhat DeGrom like in that just an absolutely brilliant pitcher at his peak who, had injury issues that kept him from maybe being the player we hoped he would be. Yeah, I mean, that's sort of the choices here is just absolute, you know, peak incredible performance or two guys who played for a really long time and therefore accrued some big numbers over time.
Yeah, I'm partial to Torrey Hunter. Love Torrey Hunter. Loved watching him dive into the stands at Fenway and not catch that Ortiz home run. So I'm a big Torrey Hunter guy. Like Torrey Hunter.
I love that guy. He didn't make a play once.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome. It was really clutch of him to not make that play, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. I think I tend to go the other direction with DeGrom and McDowell, where I would rather, and this is not a knock on Torrey Hunter. I suspect he would agree with us that even at his peak, he was never Jacob DeGrom.
I would hope he would agree with that, yeah.
But he was a very good player for a very long time.
Hey, maybe this should be the DeGrom episode because he's somebody who I kind of want to talk about for a couple of my teams today. So it's fitting.
Yeah. Well, he theoretically could be back on the mound soon, right?
I mean, depending on how you look at it, he is back on the mound, just not a major league level.
Not a major league mound. So, yeah, I think we call it the DeGrom episode.
And sweet.
Love it. Do you want to talk about him now, or is he one of the guys you wanted to save for our conversation later?
I want to save him for the conversation later because I imagine a lot of people have a lot of cheap DeGroms, and we're going to have a decision to make.
All right. Well, we'll hold on to him for later, but it will be his episode. He'll come back in a bit. We also need to talk about our head-to-head heroes. I'm going to go first on this one because the guy I picked, it's a little bit of a reach, but I'm intrigued by his last week-ish. It's a little more than a week, but Spencer Torkelson came back on the 17th. So he's been up for 8 days now. And in that time, just the one home run, although one home run in a week is not like a bad thing, but just the one home run. But he has two doubles and a triple. He is walking 10% of the time, striking out 23.3% of the time. Both those are improvements in what he was doing earlier in the year. The big improvement, though, is his ISO because of those extra base hits. He had a 144 ISO on the season, 259 since coming back up, a 296, 367, 556 slash line, which is good for a 157 WRC+. There is a 368 BABIP in there, so a little bit of batted ball luck, but he looks like a better player. I mean, his average exit velocity in the season is 89.3. Since coming back up, it's 92.9. I'm pretty intrigued here. I mean, he has hit, you know, a couple of balls over 105. He hasn't set a new like max EV or anything like that, but he did hit a ball 107.5. His barrel rate since coming back is only 5%, but his hard hit rate is up to 45%. And barrel rate in such a small sample, like one of those hard hit balls is at a slightly better launch angle, and all of a sudden his barrel rate is 10% instead of 5%. Yeah, I mean, I like what I'm seeing, and it is worth, you know, remembering that Spencer Torkelson was an incredibly highly touted prospect like a year ago, and was still sort of a, I don't know if you call him a post hype guy going into the season this year, but a guy who, despite not necessarily breaking out last year, people were like, oh, I see the signs, things are coming together. And this year's been ugly, but I mean, is this it? Are we seeing Spencer Torkelson? Is this the breakout?
Well, I don't know if I'm going to jump that far yet, but I love the pick. I mean, first of all, tomorrow is Spencer Torkelson's birthday. So what a great way to start the podcast. Oh, by
happy
wishing
birthday, Torque.
Yeah. Where he will turn a whopping 25 years old. And as a 23-year-old, like you said, he had a 31 homer, 94 RBI season. And that was with all sorts of warts. He still was able to put up those numbers. So I am excited about Torkelson. Not only was he a highly rated prospect, I mean, this was the number one overall pick in the, what was it, 2022 draft? Does that sound right? No, 2020. He was the first overall pick in the 2020 draft. So, I mean, yes, I still like Torkelson. I don't know how much you're going to get out of him rest of season. I still don't like the ballpark that he's hitting in, but I think he's a great example that progress isn't always linear. And it's an important lesson to keep in mind as we continue to feel like we get disappointed by prospects, only to find out later that they're fine. They just had to get their feet under them. It looks like in a very smaller sample, we might be seeing that with Junior Caminero, who is also on fire right now. His last like eight hit balls were all like, you know, over 95 miles an hour or something crazy like that after kind of disappointing last season and not exactly lighting the world on fire when he got called up right away this time. So I'm still in on Torque. I need to see more. I think there's still some warts, but I loved the mindset he had when he got sent down. I remember reading, I can't remember who the source was, and that's not helpful, but he was talking about himself like, yeah, I got some things I got to work on. I know what I have to do and to get back to the major league level. And he just seemed genuinely not like defeated by it, which, you know, as fantasy managers, we don't know how a player is going to take that because we don't know these players. But the fact that Torque went into it with such a positive attitude, finally started to see some results right before he got called back up. And now he's kind of continued that is exciting. Yeah, I'm far from out on Spencer Torkelson, although I do understand, especially not new leagues where he's probably snuck up to, you know, $12, $13, $15 in some places where that's a tough decision. I'm sure he was cut at those after he got sent down. But I bet his value is all over the place. But right now, you know, you're pretty happy if you have him.
Yeah, I mean, just as an example of his where he's interesting, because he did get cut in a lot of auto new leagues, right? He was $15-16. He struggles. He gets sent down. He gets cut. But like one of the rosters I want to talk about later in my food and travel league, my starting first baseman at league is a $42 Pete Alonso, who I don't think is a keeper. And then I've got now a $7 Torkelson, who I picked up as a free agent, and an $11 Cassis. And I am pretty tempted at this point, you know, Cassis is going to get hit with some arbitration. Fine. But I'm pretty tempted at this point to say, okay, let's say Cassis goes up to 20 and Torkelson is 9, to just go into next season with them as my first base and util and be totally happy and comfortable with that. Knowing that, you know, we'll have to see what Torkelson does. But right now, I think like a $9 Torkelson is a pretty good piece. Not necessarily a guy I want to be, because I was being a little hyperbolic before, being like, this is it. It's the breakout. It's here. And there's a reason I pose that as a question instead of a statement, because, you know, it's been a week. Let's see what he can do for the rest of the season. There's still some questions to be answered, but I really like what I'm seeing from him. And if you can take him into next season where you're not relying on him, right? If you're going to keep 3, a keep 5, even keep like 9 or something like that, he gets harder to keep in those situations, because you want to be keeping guys there that you can plug into your lineup, feel really good about, not worry about. You have a sub $10 version of him in an auto new league, though, where you can count him as your util, but you can have some backup options. You don't have to play him every day. If he falls apart, he doesn't kill your team. Like, I'm really intrigued by Torkelson at that kind of price.
So let me throw this out to you, because I've got almost an identical issue, if you want to call it that, but I've got a real monkey wrench to throw in there. So I've got a $14 Cassis, so a slightly more expensive Cassis. This is in the Podcasters League, which is classic 5x5, but there's no corner infield spot. So it's first base and utility. So right. Cassis for 14, and then I claimed a $5 Spencer Torkelson, but my first baseman, because I have Cassis at util, is a $28 Vlad Jr., who looks like an absolute steal. So, I mean, I'm just going to keep
Vlad. Vlad can play third now.
Does he have that for next year?
And I don't know. Yeah.
Oh, all right. Well, then never mind. I've got a
great, solves your problem.
Super problem here, because my third baseman is Joey Ortiz at the moment. So,
yeah, I'm looking at your roster right now and wondering why you're playing Ortiz over, like, I mean, your roster, I guess you're, you know,
I've been selling since, like, you know.
Yeah. But still, like, you have like you also have Junkenzie Noel, who I don't think will keep third base next year. No, he'll be first or outfield. You know, I don't know. Maybe Brett Beatty turns into something. Davison De Los Santos, maybe. I don't know. You've got some guys who could be something. I think, you know, Torkelson, like Cassis at first and Vlad at third with Torque at util.
Yeah, that
seems doable. And I especially think that works. It's even more valuable in 5x5. So you're saying in a 4x4 league or in an auto new points league or any league where power and on base percentage really matter, the gap between like first base and middle infield or outfield is much bigger. In a 5x5 league where you theoretically could plug in like a speedy middle infielder who's going to steal you 25 bases as your util, and be like, yeah, fine, whatever. There are a lot more options for you to plug in. Like, there's some random high average, good stolen base, scoring a lot of runs dude who you could slot in if Torkelson doesn't work out. Whereas in a 4x4 league or in a points league, if Torkelson doesn't do what you want him to do, you really can't play that kind of player at util. You have to then go find a masher of sorts, even if it's a, you know, a baby masher, a Rhys Hoskins, a JD Martinez, although he's really fallen off. So in that 5x5 structure, though, I like that a lot. I think that's a good spot for you to be in. I would feel good about that. So what about you? Who is your head-to-head hero this week?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Yainer Diaz, who going into the season was taken as a top five catcher. And for a lot of the year, it looked like, yeah, it was just another catcher who like kind of got off to a nice season and then it fell apart. Almost like Jonah Heim, who I still kind of like. But we all remember the crazy season Heim had last year, especially the RBI number because of that Texas lineup. And he just turns out to just be another catcher who you can drop and then pick up a week later when he gets hot again. And it kind of looked like Yainer Diaz, not to be too harsh on him because he's still super young. Yainer Diaz is only 25 years old. It kind of looked like he was beginning to fit that mold because he was just he wasn't doing anything. The last week, he has been excellent. Yainer Diaz over the last week, 11 for 28, 3 homers. That's a .393 average. Those 3 homers came in 3 consecutive games. So he was really on fire earlier in the week, but he's gotten a hit in every game this week. In on the ESPN player rater, at least, he has moved up to be now the, drum roll, third overall catcher ahead of Adley Rutschman and Cal Raleigh. He's only behind William Contreras and Sal Perez. So Yanner Diaz has really come around. You know, you look at the Statcast page, this number really jumped out to me. His expected batting average is 307. That's the 97th percentile. Oh, crazy that is for a catcher. Yeah. He still has no idea how to take a walk. He's chasing too much. But like, you got to lower the bar for this position. And Yanner Diaz, no question, has been great. Does that mean I'm going to draft him 150 next year or like he was going this year? No, definitely not. But right. At least those managers that did take him and held on, you know, they're finally seeing some reward there.
Yeah, I have him in that podcasters league we were just talking about. He's been my catcher. I started the year with him and Elias Diaz as my two catchers and was like, dude, I'm set. This is going to be a strength for me. I'll play Elias at home, Yiner as much as I can. And yeah, it didn't really work out. I still have Elias Diaz on my roster because I just haven't replaced him yet. I like haven't won an auction to ditch him.
When the Rockies have now replaced him and you haven't, you have to start worrying.
Yeah, no, I literally like, I haven't had a lot of needs in that league.
Yeah.
And so I haven't been winning a lot of auctions. And so it's just been a while. Like if I go look at my roster, it's like, I just won an auction yesterday to add Dylan Carlson. I had an open roster spot though, so I didn't have to make a cut. I won Sir Anthony Dominguez 10 days ago. And I cut Angel Martinez at that time. Yeah, I mean, that's like basically all I've done. The only point at which I should have probably done it is I won Austin Wells 2 weeks ago, and I should have dropped Diaz then, and I didn't. But he will be my next cut if and when it ever comes around. But that's not really the point. Point is that Yiner Diaz has proven to be, has come around now, and now between him and Austin Wells, I'm in a, like, I have them for $10 combined. Like, that's a great catcher tandem to have. I feel really good about that. Diaz, especially in that 5x5 league, I mean, you mentioned the expected batting average. Like, he's got a 292 career batting average. It's 302 this year. It was 282 last year. And last year, you know, there's a 292 BABIP. This year it's up to 329. It'll probably come back down, which probably keeps his average more in the 290s than the 300-ish range. But like in a 5x5 league, you're going to get a 280 to 300-ish batting average out of your catcher. Plus, you know, the home run power down a bit this year. But I mean, his hard hit rate is up. His max EV is up. His average exit velocity is even. His X slugging is much better than his actual slugging. Like his slugging is 459, his X slugging is 480. I think you can probably, like, he's at 15 home runs this year. He still may get to 20 this year. I think in a, you know, catcher length season that he's going to give you, right? Cause he's not going to play every single day, but in a catcher length season that he's going to give you, I think he's good for 20 to 25 home runs and a high batting average. And he's going to hit in a good spot in a good lineup. He's a little less valuable in OBP leagues. He walked 3.9% of the time this year. It was 2.9% of the time last year. He doesn't strike out a lot. And so with that high average and not a lot of strikeouts, like the on-base percentage is fine. It's a 328 this year. As the BABIP corrects, though, that'll come down. And so in OBP leagues, he might only be a 310, 315 OBP kind of guy. That hurts in points leagues as well. But that's enough out of your catcher. Like that's still a good catcher. It's just not quite, I think he's a bigger asset in 5x5 than he is in other formats because the average is so good and the on-base percentage is so mediocre. But yeah, I'm a big fan.
Yeah, he's been unbelievable. And you brought up the lineup that he's in that context. And I mentioned that for Jonah Heim last year, and that's been huge for Diaz this year. He's basically batted cleanup permanently since mid-June. He hit cleanup every single game in July. For the Astros, and what that's resulted in is he only has 9 more at bats than Yordan Alvarez. So it's not like there's a huge difference here. He has 9 more. He has 4 more RBI than Yordan. So that lineup context has been absolutely huge for Yanner Diaz.
Yeah. And it's, let's just say again, in that 5x5 context, he's not quite at the same level outside of 5x5 because those RBIs don't really help and that batting average doesn't really help. But that's not a knock on him in those formats. I still like him in those formats, but just 5x5, he's just in such a great situation and does exactly the right things for you. It's nice to see, though, after, like you said, it wasn't a great start to the year for him, and now he's really sort of rounded into shape. So, yeah, those are our head-to-head heroes. Both of them, I don't know, good, interesting conversations. I think both are keepers. And, you know, Diaz, it'll depend. If you picked him up 2 years ago, like if you picked him up in last year's draft or if you picked him up mid-season last year and kept him, you probably have him at a price where he's still a keeper. If you drafted him this year, you might not. He may have, like you said, he may have gotten overinflated. So you're gonna have to sort of look at him and see. Torkelson, it just depends if you picked him up in season. If he was cut in your league and you picked him up and you're sitting on him now, he's probably a keeper. If you had him going into the season, he's probably not. Even if you've been holding him for a couple of years, there's a good chance that at this point his price has increased to the point that he's not really a keeper. But in those situations where you can keep those guys, they're nice pieces to have. I feel like we talk a lot about like, oh, this guy's a breakout and he's a last round pick and he's an obvious keeper and that's great, blah, blah, blah. But like you're only going to get so many of those. And so guys like Torkelson, like Diaz, who may not be the most exciting keepers. It's helpful to have them because you still need to fill out that roster. So
100%.
Yeah. With that, let's take a quick break. And we come back, we'll dive into our topic for the episode. Welcome back to Keeper Cut. Chad Young and Pete Ball here. We talked through our hometown heroes is wrong. Our head-to-head heroes. Could be hometown heroes. It wasn't this time. Could be in the future. But our head-to-head heroes, we talked through both Spencer Torkelson and Yiner Diaz. But now we're going to get into the meat of the episode, and what we were doing is we've been looking at our difficult keeper choices at this point. And I know it feels a little bit like, you know, it's too early to be talking about that, but it's not, because if your trade deadline hasn't passed, you have to figure out who you want to trade and who you're going to refuse to trade or what it's going to take to trade somebody. You have to start thinking about what you're doing with free agent pickups, who you're willing to drop and who you're not willing to drop. Is it a challenging question to answer at this time of year, because anybody you drop, there's some risk that somebody else picks them up and gets them real cheap, and you gotta decide what that's like. So there are some difficult keeper decisions to be made. We each went through our rosters and picked out a few names that are like, man, I don't know what to do with this guy, or I don't know how I'm thinking through this. But yeah, Pete, why don't you go first? Who's one of your tough keeper choices?
Sure. So this one's my home league. I've talked about it on the show in the past. It is a 16-team head-to-head league over on ESPN. It's 7x7, so it's runs, home runs, RBI, stolen bases, average, like it normally would be for hitters, with total bases and walks added in. For pitchers, it's the standard five categories, but also strikeouts per nine, quality starts, and instead of just saves, it's saves plus holds. And so it's a three-keeper league. One of my keepers is locked up, and that's Gunnar Henderson for an 18th round pick. He's going to be a keeper for me, hopefully for a very, very long time. That's great. And this league has unique rules where, and I could get into the history why, but I'm not going to do that. If you're curious, you can DM me. But if you keep two players who cost a first round pick, you pay a first and a second. If you keep three players that cost a first round pick, they cost you a first, a second, and a third. It was kind of a compromise that we came up with. So Fernando Tatis Jr. and Yordan Alvarez, I have them both, and they both cost a first round pick, which means I could use my first and second round pick and keep both. So it's like you're kind of getting a discount, and with inflation and 16 teams like that, that one of those guys for a second round pick, no matter which one it is going to be a bargain, despite all the time that Tatis has missed this season. And so I'm half tempted to be like, you know what? That's three like top 15 hitters in fantasy, Henderson, Alvarez, and Tatis. Why don't I just pay the first and the second? I still get a huge discount on Gunnar Henderson and just go into next year with three elite keepers. But I do have two other good options. So it really only makes sense to keep Alvarez with Tatis or Tatis with Alvarez. It doesn't really make sense to keep just one of them because then it's going to cost a first round pick to keep them and you're not really getting a lot of value. The value comes from keeping both and one of them becomes a second. The other two players that I could keep instead of those two are Jarren Duran for a ninth round pick. And keep in mind, again, it's a 16 team league. So a ninth round pick is much later in the draft than you think it might be in a standard 12. And Jose Altuve, much older player, but hasn't failed me yet. I've been keeping him for 3 years now for an eighth round pick. So it's Henderson for an 18th with Altuve for an eighth and Duran for a ninth, or I just keep three monster hitters. Alvarez and Tatis would cost me a first and a second. And again, I'd have Henderson for an 18th. So that's kind of what I've been wrestling with. Those are really my only five options.
Boy, that's interesting. And in a moment, when I bring up my first difficult to choice, it's also going to have to do with Tatis. And so I mean, I sort of think that's where the conversation needs to start is, do you believe that Tatis is a first round pick? Right. And I don't know if I do. He obviously has been injured, right? Tatis has missed a lot of time. He's only played 80 games so far this year. In the time he's played, he's got 14 home runs, 8 stolen bases, 279 average, solid OBP at 354, which, you know, since you have walks, right? Or
yep.
Yeah. Yes. And then you have total bases. Slugging is only 468, which is basically a total. Like, he's not doing a ton for you in total bases. He's not doing a ton for you. He's doing pretty well for you, I guess, in walks. You know, he was on pace for like a 27 to 30 home run, 15 stolen base kind of season. If he had stayed healthy, which he didn't. And, you know, health is going to have to be a concern for him moving forward, and it is kind of for Yordan Alvarez as well. And so I think my concern here is I'm not sure I think that Tatis is just, I just don't know that he is a clear-cut first round value, and he and Alvarez have a lot of downside risk because of injuries, and that combined is probably enough to push me to Duran and Altuve.
Yeah. I mean, the downside on injuries for Tatis are self-evident, right? I mean,
yeah.
For Alvarez, I mean, he's been hurt, but like the overall production has still been so elite for just four straight years now, where like,
yeah,
he's currently out right now with neck discomfort, but I don't think he's fallen on, you know, knock on wood, on the IL once this year. He's played 121 games, so like I would never expect to get 150 games out of Yordan Alvarez, but I think it's reasonable at this point to expect 135 to 145. And whereas for Tatis, obviously that's not the case. I love Jarren Duran. I do. It feels too good to be true as a Red Sox fan, the season that he's having. And this league does favor power so much with total bases, RBI, home runs. And his total bases have been excellent. I think Duran leads Major League Baseball in triples. I don't know. I am really torn on this one. For what it's worth, with inflation, Tatis would definitely go in the first round in this draft, especially yeah. Like, a lot of people usually end up with their first round picks. I think we need to see him come back because, you know, Tatis has been a player we've talked about a lot in the past, and I haven't really wavered that I still just think he's flat out elite. He is somehow still just 25 years old. I don't know if that has changed in like 5 years, but he is still just 25 years old. and like, yes, it's tempting to look at the overall production in the games that he's played this year and be like, here's what he was pacing for. But he really began to pick things up right before that injury. And so like you brought up his slugging percentage and how it's disappointing. He is, his expected slug is in the 96th percentile at 553. So like there's no question to me that the talent hasn't gone anywhere. The ability hasn't gone anywhere. And I was over the shoulder. I thought, all right, he had the surgery. It's going to take a while to get him back to where he needed to be. But now a stress reaction in his leg, like that feels like something that could come back, especially in the femur. He's been out for so long. It's kind of been mysterious, almost like the Kyle Tucker injury. So I don't think I've ever felt more hesitant about Tatis when it comes to injuries, which may seem silly because we watched the guy like literally throw his shoulder out of his socket. But this one feels worse because it's almost like the shoulder is like, view it like Tommy John, right? Like a guy's going to have it. He's going to rehab. And then if he's only 25 years old, he's going to come back and he's going to be a pitcher again. In Tatis's case, he had the shoulder surgery. It took him a while to come back, but then he started hitting the crap out of the ball again. This injury though feels weird. So if, I guess it's one that we can't come to an answer with right now. And none of us, just so our listeners know, should be making a decision on this stuff right now. It's why we have up until our deadlines. Right. But in Tatis's case, he's so good. And in my mind, he's so much better, has such a higher ceiling than even Altuve or even Duran at their prices, that if I could combine him with Henderson and Alvarez, I'm not ready to throw that out yet. But if he comes back and it's touch and go, maybe he ends up out for another couple games because the injury rears its head again, that I think I won't have a choice at that point but to go in another direction.
Yeah, I think like I just... To me, if I'm thinking about like, it's like I pulled up, I was looking for somebody who had an early 2025 rankings just to look at something. So these are Yahoo's rankings that were posted a month ago now. So they're already maybe out of date, but it was just something to give me a starting point. They have their top, let's see, is this a 16 team league?
Yeah.
So their top 16, they have Witt, Judge, Henderson, Julio Rodriguez fourth, which seems like it might be a little reach given how he's played.
Yeah, I don't understand that one.
Kyle Tucker fifth, Soto, Otani, Ellie De La Cruz, then Tatis ninth, Betts 10th, Yordan 11th. And then Austin Riley, Jose Ramirez, CJ Abrams, Freddie Freeman, and Tarek Skubal rounding out the top 16. That basically puts you in a position where if you have a late first round pick, you'd be getting value on both of those two. If you have an early first round pick, you may not be. Right? Then you're getting value on one, but not the other. I'm looking at that and like, I don't know that I like those guys both better than Betts, who's going in between them. But I don't know that I see a ton of others that are obviously.
Did you say Austin Riley 12th?
Yeah, they have Austin Riley 12th.
Did Austin Riley make these rankings?
Yeah, I mean, and if you look, like there are guys like Vlad Guerrero at 17th, I'd have him higher up than that, I think.
How is Devers 23 and Riley 12th?
I don't
know. What?
Acuna 25th?
J-Rod in the top four.
I know. So, like I said, I'm just trying to use something that will help me think through values.
Yeah.
And I don't think these are great, to say the least. But I'm not, like, if I'm, as the guy who is sort of low, certainly among the two of us, the guy who's low on Tatis, I don't know that I look at this and jump out and say like, no, he's not a first round pick.
Yeah.
I don't know that I want to take him in the first round, but I don't know that I see an obvious set of guys I want to take over him.
Well, part of the problem is that there's so many guys like, yeah, we can poke holes in Tatis. That's easy. That's low hanging fruit, but you can do that with so many of these other names. I mean, Betts is older than these guys by a mile. He missed a ton of this season with a hand injury. That's not someone I'm rushing to draft in the first round. Now look, If you listen to the show, you know I love Mookie Betts. But, like, there's holes there. Other than, really, the top four in my mind at this point, at this stage, is Witt Jr., Judge, Henderson, and Soto. And I feel like that's maybe mean to Otani, and I'll just call it a top five. But the DH thing gets me, okay? Outside of that, I don't think anything is set in stone. if anything, Ellie at six. And then it really is after that to me, it's anybody's ball game. I love Jose Ramirez and I probably would put him seventh, but like, I don't know, we've seen Jose Ramirez put seasons like this forward. And then the next season, you know, he could go 25 and 18 and you've wasted your first round pick. So yeah, I guess looking at this, that does kind of make me think maybe Tatis is worth a first, but I want to see more from him. I need him to come back in early September for me to do that.
I think the thing that's a challenge for me with this is you would be giving up. So your eighth and ninth round picks, which are picks like, and they're, because it's a 16 teamer, eighth and ninth are like in the 130s to 150s, right?
It sounds right. I can look it up right now.
So if you're asking me if I'd rather have Tatis and Yordan with, I mean, looking at guys who are in that, these rankings are not good, so it's really hard to know, but like, you know, they have Zach Neto at 124, which I think feels a little low for him. He probably could be higher than that. They've got, Brenton Doyle is down around that range. I think he should be higher than that too. But like, if you could have Doyle and Neto with Tatis and Alvarez, or you could have Duran and Altuve with, let's call it, Jose Ramirez and Corbin Carroll. I think Duran, Altuve, Carroll, and Ramirez, it certainly has a higher floor than the alternative.
Mm.
And I don't think the ceiling is that much lower.
Yeah. I can tell you Joe Ram and Carroll are probably both going to be kept. Joe Ram for the same rule. I know they were just hypothetical examples. The top of this draft is, this league's so old and there's so much inflation, is probably not as good as you'd think. Look, Pablo Lopez was drafted very highly this year, but he was the third overall pick in our draft. So stuff like that will come into play. It might not be quite as high. Honestly, Chad, I think part of this, and we can move on to the next scenario, is like the anti-Red Sox fantasy manager in me. Like, I didn't even want to draft Duran, but he was so far and away the best option. And I was like, fine, I'll just take him. And if I have to drop him, I'll drop him. And he just keeps performing well. And I just keep expecting it to go away. And so the idea of keeping a Red Sox, like, just seems crazy to me. And I need to get over that in my head.
You do. You need to get over that.
Yeah.
I get it. I get it. I just think you're...
Are we not worried about Altuve, like waiting too long on Altuve here? Like, I get it. He just keeps producing. He is...
I just think the risk that Altuve is done to me is lower than the risk that you get 75 games out of Tatis.
Yeah. I don't understand how he gets away with this exit velocity. I really don't. I don't get it.
But he's just been doing it forever, so.
I know, but it's crazy. He's like 86 mile an hour exit velocity.
Anyways, we've talked a lot about Tatis. Let me jump into my difficult choice, which is in Autonew League One. It's a 4x4, so on base, slugging, home runs, and runs. I have a $49 Tatis. That is basically a first round price on Tatis. If I go. Sort of curious, if I look at all players, if I look at all the bats in that league, I'm gonna see if I can pull this up real quick. Sorted by salary, there's a $60 Soto, a $59 Betts, $59 Judge, $57 Alvarez, $55 Pete Alonso, $54 Trout, $50 Freeman, and then the $49 Tatis. So he has 2, 4, 6, 2, 8. I think is what I just said. Eighth highest price. And there's a couple other guys still in the 40s. Seager at 47, Ramirez at 45, Harper at 42, Vlad at 41, J-Rod at 40. And so I'm in the same boat. It's at $51 next year, he is a top 10 price. And what's killing me is I thought he was a pretty easy trade candidate. When my team, because my team is not good in that league, it's struggling. but I can't trade him because nobody is confident he's coming back ever. Right. And I think this is the thing is like, he is still on track supposedly to come back in September. What does September mean? What does that look like? Nobody knows. And you like the reality is for the Padres right now, all they really need from him in September, unless things go really sideways for them, and I'm going to double check the standings to make sure I'm not totally wrong here. All they need from him in September is enough time to get his swing right before October, right? I mean, they are in the second wild card spot right now. They're two games up on Atlanta, who's in the third spot, and 4.5 up on New York, and then 7 up on San Francisco. There's a chance the Mets catch them, I guess. There's a chance the Braves catch them. I don't think it's likely that both of those teams catch them. So I think it's I think they're pretty close to locked into a playoff spot. Not exactly, but they're close, and they've been playing really well lately. So for the Padres, there's no rush necessarily to get Tatis back. Like, they could be happy to be like, yeah, we'll give him a couple weeks at the end of the season. We'll make sure he's as healthy as he can be. We'll let him get a swing right, and he'll be ready to go for that wild card series. And so as I totally understand why a fantasy manager, like if I'm contending right now and somebody has a non-keeper Tatis to trade, I totally get being like, I don't know what I want to give up for a week or two of Tatis, which might be all I can count on. And there's a risk it's less than that. Now, there's a possibility it's like a full month. He could be back in 10 days or something. You get almost a full month out of him. Like, but I get why nobody wants to trade for him, but now I'm stuck with this, like, do I want to pay effectively a first-round price for him? And I think the answer is no.
I don't think I would, especially in Otnew, where, like, you know that you'll have a shot at him if you end up deciding, right, you know what, I want Tatis. I don't know that. If I let him go in the draft, there's a really good chance he goes first or second overall, and I'm not going to have that pick, so he's gone. In your case, you might say, you know what, I'm going to put aside $50 for a first-round level bat. I'm comfortable cutting Tatis, and if it turns out that bat has to be Tatis, well, I'm just going to get him back for pretty much what I paid for him, and I know you're not usually a fan of that, but you're keeping your options open by just cutting him in rolling the dice that you won't get necessarily a better player, because I don't think there's many of those in baseball, period, but a much safer player who you're more comfortable spending that money on. So I think I'm like the number one Tatis fan, and I think at $49 I would cut him, unless, again, he comes back in September and looks exactly like he did right before he went down with the injury, which is a top five player in fantasy. If he does that, then it's an easy decision because now you've got him at a bargain.
Yeah. He'll be interesting. I think if he does that, there's a chance I would try to trade him in the offseason. Someone else take limit on the that risk. First round cost. And yeah. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, I'm going to go into another one of my difficult choices. All right, welcome back, Keeper Cup Podcast. We're talking through some difficult keeper choices. Earlier in the episode, I talked about a league where I've got a $42 Pete Alonso at first base, and then I've got Torque and Cassis behind him, and I am trying to trade Alonso there in the next 6 days. I hopefully will find a deal for him because I don't think he's a great keeper at $42 and at $44 anyways, and I'm obviously not going to keep him with those two. The more challenging discussion here for me is, as I'm looking at trade options, my second most expensive player after that Alonso is a $31 Francisco Lindor. I've had him on the block. And there's been some interest. Nothing's really come together. But part of the reason nothing's come together is I don't know. I may want to just keep a $33 Lindor. Like, he's been awesome this year. I know what Ohtani is doing, but I think Lindor, when you add in the defense, which maybe doesn't matter for our context, but when you add in the defense and stuff, I mean, Lindor is ahead of Ohtani in F4. Right? Like, he is a legitimate MVP candidate. He may even be the right MVP. Obviously, the defense doesn't matter for me here, except that he's obviously going to maintain shortstop eligibility for eternity because he's an elite defensive shortstop. Are you keeping a $31, $33 after his salary goes up, Lindor?
Yes. I wouldn't even know what the counter would be, other than he started really poorly and people got ahead of themselves and saying that he was a bust and a terrible signing and all that stuff. Francisco Lindor is a stud. He went 30-30 last year. He's going to go 30-30 this year with potentially 20 more points in batting average. So I think he's not only a keep at $33. I think he's a massive bargain at $33. So yes, I mean, you might just be asking the wrong guy, but I don't see what the counter would be to not keep Lindor at that price, unless you had like a $4 Ellie De La Cruz and a $6 Corey Seager. Like and even then I'd be like, well, you can play Lindor at utility. Like I wouldn't really understand the counter against keeping Lindor at that price. I think he's a stud.
Yeah. And I mean, my middle infield situation in that league, I have an $8 Andrés Giménez, who has been very disappointing this year. I have a $10 Sadane Rafaela, who maybe is a more interesting keeper discussion. He was really expensive in the draft.
Really?
Yeah, I think so. Let me double check.
Oh, I feel like a fool for cutting him for like $3, but wow, that's...
Yeah, in the draft, I picked him up in the Food and Travel League draft for $10. That was just what he cost.
Wow.
I've got a $3 Jorge Polanco. I've got a $3 Spencer Horwitz. I got a $2 Michael Massey. I've got a $9 Nolan Gorman, who is now in the minors again. I've got a $5 Vaughn Grissom. I've got a $3 Adael Amador. Like, I have a lot of guys. I also have a $16 Matt McClain, who we talked about last week. It's like, I have a lot of guys, but there isn't... I guess Lindor is that anchor, and I probably should be building around him, which maybe means I should take him off my trade block. Unless he really brings me back a haul and a return, I guess. But
yeah, and that's always the exception, right? Always listen on all your players, but I'm not hearing anybody that even comes close to making me feel comfortable cutting Francisco Lindor at even like market value. But again, I think based on the 2 years he's had now, these last two seasons, that's a bargain.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Well, now that you've told me my tough choice isn't a tough choice, what's your next tough choice?
Sure. So this one's kind of interesting. This is a 12-team head-to-head league. We keep four. It's 6x6, so it's extra base hits for hitters and strikeouts per nine for pitchers that are the extra categories. And we also do quality starts instead of wins, which for one of these players might matter quite a bit, especially lately. But I'll just get the obvious one out of the way. I have Ellie De La Cruz for a 23rd round pick. To me, that's a definite keep.
I would keep him.
Yeah. I think I'm going to do that. I also have Bobby Witt Jr. for a third round pick, and third round is expensive, but for Bobby Witt Jr., that is extremely, extremely cheap. When you're talking about a guy who might be the number one overall pick in drafts, if you can get him for a third, that the difference between the first overall pick in the draft and keeping him for a third versus like, you know, I have here Altuve for a 12th, like that, it's not even close. So Witt and Ellie, I think, are locked up. And then it just gets interesting for these last two spots. I have James Wood for a 25th round pick, Jose Altuve for a 12th, Garrett Crochet for a 25th. Either Wood or Crochet would go to a 24th if I kept both, and it's up to me which one of those does. Shota Imanaga for a 13th. I think he just kind of earned his spot on here, although to be honest with you, he's probably last for me. And then I just can't quit this player. I don't think anybody should. Jacob deGrom hitting 99 to 100 miles an hour again in his rehab for 22nd round pick. Like, here's why I have him here. Every single time we've seen Jacob deGrom pitch, he has been a bona fide best pitcher in baseball, ace level guy. It's always, always, always been the case. So, like, I have a hard time. Like, yes, he's older now. He had Tommy John, but he's shoving in his rehab with the velocity. So I can't get it out of my head that I could have the number one pitcher for a year or two in all of fantasy baseball for a 22nd round pick and then a 20th round pick as it goes up by two rounds each year. So, I mean, I could still keep one of those young guys, obviously, because we're keeping four. So it could be Witt and Ellie. Those are my locks. And then I could do Wood or Crochet with DeGrom. To me, though, I think Altuve and Imanaga are out. And then it's when DeGrom comes back, if he looks like the Jacob DeGrom we all know and love, which one of Wood or Crochet gets the boot? Or am I too crazy? Am I living in, you know, 2017 here and I should just keep Wood and Crochet and move on from my hopes with DeGrom? That's ultimately where I'm at. Yeah, I guess I can't ignore Altuve for a 12th. He is the second best second baseman in fantasy baseball.
Yeah, I get why you're not talking about Altuve there as much as I like him. I sort of agree with you that like Imanaga belongs on the list, but probably isn't
his
choice.
Yeah.
If I'm really looking at those other three, man, it's a tough call because like Wood is showing signs that he could be a very good player.
And it is a five outfielder league.
And it's a five outfielder league. He has been excellent, right? But, yeah, you know, it's also a almost 30% K rate, a 405 BAPIT. Like, it's a 162 ISO. Like, there are warts in what Wood is doing. Now, he hasn't turned 22 for another couple of weeks. Like, he is a child. Right. And so these aren't warts that are like, oh, he's not like, he looks like he's going to be a star. But there's, you know, there is some risk there. There's a 56% ground ball rate. He has not hit a lot of fly balls at all. He didn't in AAA either. And so, you know, what does the power look like if he doesn't elevate the ball more is an interesting question. Like, there's some risk there is what it comes down to. The risk with DeGrom is pretty obvious at this point, which is, yes, he looks great when he pitches, but he also, how many innings are you banking on out of him? And man, I mean, Crochet, he's got a 34.2% strikeout rate, a 5.9% walk rate. He has a pretty high ground ball rate of 45.8%, which helps a lot. Like, he has a 2.83 FIP, 2.54 XFIP because his home run per fly ball rate is actually inflated at 14.2%. And I don't, like, the reason XFIP exists is because in small samples, home run per fly ball rate is not stable. And I don't really see a lot of good reason to think that Crochet is going to continue to post high home run per fly ball rates, which means that there's upside beyond what he's doing right now. He's in just a horrific team situation that is not going to get a lot better next year unless he gets traded, which he very well might get traded.
Seems like he's
if he gets traded, I mean, it would make sense. They're not going to compete anytime soon, and he would just bring back a huge return in the offseason, right, you would think. I think I'd be... I guess here's what I'll say. Crochet is... We just said Wood is not quite 22. Crochet just turned 25 a couple months ago. DeGrom is 36. He doesn't turn 37 until next season, but he's 36. He has thrown, he made basically a full season of starts in 2019. He made 32 starts in 2018, 32 in 2019. He made 12 starts in 2020, which was a full season in the shortened season. Since then, 15, 11, and 6. And he's going to make less than 6 this year. That's 92, 64, and 64.1 and 30.1 innings. Again, it's going to be less than that this year. He's going to give you elite innings next year. You really think you're getting more than 70?
Oh, that's a super low bar. I hope so.
Is it?
He will
be 3 years removed from throwing 70 innings in a season.
So I get. I think I view it kind of like I viewed Chris Sale, where granted Sale, after he had Tommy John, ended up having a series of odd injuries like the bike incident and the comebacker and all that stuff. And I don't know if you saw, like, a month ago, of course, there was a rocket comebacker to him in Atlanta. Sure. And he just fields it cleanly. Of course, that was the case. Anyway, I'm fine. I'm fine. It's fine. where was I going with that? Well, like, Sale had been like this absolute horse and people are like, oh, he's injury prone now. I think it's just because his elbow kicked. And like, how much of DeGrom like starting up and then getting shut down and starting up and getting shut down? It was always an arm injury. Should he just have had Tommy John surgery 3 years ago and we wouldn't view him this way? Instead, he would have just come back and been rock solid again. I don't know. I think, you know, talking through that and hearing the age, man, Jacob DeGrom, 36 years old, that's like depressing to hear. It does make me think, obviously, if the season ended right now, I would have to keep Wood and Crochet. But the tempting is going to be real, or the temptation is going to be real, where if DeGrom makes four or five starts, you know, in September, probably four, let's say four, and he, you know, is posting a 30% strikeout rate, he's throwing 99 miles an hour and you know, gives up no more than two earned runs in a start, I'm going to have a hell of a time keeping another pitcher over him. Even if it's Crochet.
I hear you. But I think what I'm hearing you say is if he comes back and for a month can throw as well as the guy who's more than a decade younger than him and not injured.
That's fair.
I'll keep him for a higher price. Here is the other thing is there is a chance that you'll regret this next year. That you'll keep Crochet and he'll take a small step back. DeGrom will be healthy enough to give you 100 innings, 115 innings, something like that. I don't see any possibility he gives you more than that, for what it's worth. But then the year after that, you've got a 21st or 20th round or whatever it is DeGrom versus like a 24th round Crochet, and it'll get to be an easier and easier choice. And that's assuming that everything goes perfectly for DeGrom, which is not an assumption I want to make. So my thinking on this is I'm pretty sure I'd rather have Crochet than DeGrom next year. And I know I want Crochet over DeGrom in 2026.
Yeah, that's probably right. That's probably right. I mean, the innings limit stuff on Crochet, I don't know how much that is messing with him because he's been horrible. He had a terrible August. His FIP was almost six in the month of August. And so part of it, too, is like we're talking about a pitcher who, if they have a track record, it's not a good one. Their track record of success is three extremely good months. And it's a pitcher who, we all thought all along would be really good. He's a lefty who throws super hard. I get all that stuff. But for as much as we can pick on DeGrom for age and for, you know, how little he's pitched, which are pretty important things when it comes to a pitcher, Garrett Crochet on the opposite side of things is not exactly Nolan Ryan. So, like, I think both present their risks. With it being long-term, though, obviously Crochet, if he were to hit for me, if that was a successful keep, then I'm going to have him for much longer than I'm going to have DeGrom, and that's going to be more worthwhile.
So just to throw this out there, though, on Crochet, you're talking about the rough August. We'll go back to July 28th because he had a bad start on July 28th. Bad-ish. So July 28th against Seattle. Three innings, three earned runs. Sorry, three earned runs, but five total runs. Three strikeouts, one walk. 6.51 FIP, 4.69x FIP. Bad. Then he got a start at Minnesota. Four innings, two strikeouts, four walks. Only gave up one run, and it was on a home run. But obviously, the FIP, very bad there, 8.42. XFIP, 6.68. The next start at Chicago, or no, against the Cubs at home. He gave up four home runs in two and a third innings. He also struck out five and walked zero. Now, four home runs is a lot, but there's a reason he has a 21.17 FIP and a 2.78 XFIP in that start, right? Home run per fly ball luck is a thing that bounces around, and that is not to say that those home runs were all lucky. Like, you give up four home runs, you're doing something wrong. But then, his two starts since then against at Houston, tough park, tough team, and at San Francisco, not a tough park, not a tough team. Eight total innings, 13 strikeouts, one walk, no home runs, three earned runs on eight hits over those eight innings. He's been brilliant again. Now, the challenge with Crochet is, you know, limited innings. He's getting towards, like, they're clearly babying him at this point. He hasn't gone more than four innings since July started. He went seven innings on June 30th. He hasn't gone more than four since then. He's probably not going to go more than four again. And there's a good chance we're a week or two away from him, you know, ending the season with a phantom IL stint, right? I mean, there's no reason for him to keep throwing innings at this point, other than, you know, at some level you do want to build him up so that he's ready for next year. but he's thrown 128 innings. If he throws 135, 140 innings, something like that this year, that's more than enough to feel good about what he can do next year. And at that point, he gets shut down to be put on ice until they need him or until they trade him. He's been good his last couple times out. It's like, yeah, there was a blip in there, but of course there's going to be a blip in there. He's a young pitcher still learning, basically, who has never thrown this much before. I'm not surprised there was a blip, but he got over it. So I still think what you're looking at is, boy, I really hope DeGrom comes back. And like, you're basically hoping that DeGrom and Crochet do the same thing for the month of September. Limited starts, limited innings, great results. And then you're going to take the much older, more expensive pitcher with bigger injury issues and less of a future. And I can't see it. I would take Crochet.
Yeah, it's definitely, like, I find myself agreeing with you. I'm not as sold on Crochet being great this month. And even in July, like, I'm looking at the whip. It's been over 1.6 for both months, but it's only 27 innings pitched. I think it's just more, I'm not 100% sold that Crochet is like this ace that he's being treated as. At the same time, you have to consider age and price. And when you consider age and price, it has to be Crochet. It's weird for me to say that, to take this pitcher over that particular pitcher based on 3 months of being good. But I think you're right. I think the age piece is too important.
Yeah. And you could spend the offseason shopping Crochet and DeGrom. I would probably shop Wood too. I'd be very curious, like, could you trade one of those three for either someone you just like better, or for, you know, trade one of them for like two really interesting keepers who are more obviously a better fit, or trade two of those guys for one elite keeper or something like that. Like, there may be a trade you can make that solves this problem for you, because I don't think there's anything wrong with keeping any of those guys, but Whit Ellie, Wood, Crochet, especially in a five outfielder league, I think is the right answer.
Yeah, I had a Judge on the line for Wood and Crochet at the deadline, a team that was out of it, and then they got cold feet. And that Judge is worth a first round pick, so I don't know why they backed out of it. But if I win the league anyway,
cost them a first to keep him.
Thank you. It would cost them a first to keep him, and they could have had, you know, last round Wood and last round Crochet. I think that was the final offer there. I don't know. Whatever. Might have been Taj Gibson. Taj Bradley.
I will say, depending on how the draft order gets set there, a late first round keeper price on Judge is still pretty good.
It is. I'd rather have Wood and Crochet, but I'm not a manager, so it doesn't matter. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, we've been going over an hour, so I think we're gonna call it here. We'll obviously have more time as the season goes on to talk about tough keeper decisions. But in the meanwhile, good luck with your auto new keeper deadlines. You can always hit us up on Twitter at Keeper Cut. It's cut with a K. At Chad Young, at Pete B Baseball. We'll do our best to answer questions for you if you got them. Otherwise, have a good week, and we'll see you next Monday.